Chapter 6. Something had excited the market. Whenever something riled up the traders around the wall, the broad steps would fill with merchants and businessmen waving certificates and banknotes. They whirled around the banks and markets in a raucous squall, buying and selling shares in a flurry of trades. Dungeon hoards, plunder funds, companies, and commodities changed hands rapidly, driving impossibly complex trends that every broker was desperately trying to predict. Gorm didn't care whether the prices were rising or falling, but he had a lot to say about the market activity, especially the parts of it that were blocking the broad steps.
"Bloody thrice cursed ashen bones!" he shouted as another trader bumped into him. "Get out of my way!"
The merchant ignored him and rushed off, shouting for someone selling Dragon of Windspar.
"We've got to make it back to the temple before dark," Gorm told Gleebeck. "We start training tonight."
"What?"
"Burn this mob. This way!"
Gorm ducked off the broad steps, turned down a side street, and headed ridgeward. He moved like a Scribkin steam engine, pounding down the street so fast that Gleebeck had to run to keep up. As fast as he moved, he couldn't catch up to his mind. A professional hero again, a reinstated license, a clean record, and all the riches and fame that professional heroics could bring were within reach once more. Success wasn't a certainty, but it was a possibility, and that was better than he'd had a couple of nights ago.
"Sagich! Regirik Nabzib!"
"Of course I'm going for it!" Gorm barked. "I got a chance to get back everything I lost, everything I dreamed of for the past 20 years! And me only other options are facing guild justice or sulking until the so-called seventh hero gets us all killed. I'd be mad not to try to make it work."
"What?"
"The high scribe is totally green, if you'll pardon the expression. He wouldn't last 2 minutes against a goblin, no offense."
It dawned on Gorm that a surprisingly large portion of heroic jargon centered on demeaning, if not killing, Shadowkin, and for once he was glad that Gleebeck probably had no idea what he was saying.
"Look, point is, he ain't really a professional hero. We've got to get him enough skills to stay alive."
"Spurl, the Zagagnagagan Rarut."
"Aye, and you too. I'll teach you knife work with Niln. Just enough to keep you on your feet while we're on the quest. Then we can get you a real job."
Gorm trailed off. Of course, once the quest was over, Gleebeck would need a new line of work, as a servant in a tavern, or a stable hand, or a farm worker. Almost any job would be better than roaming about with Gorm. Goblins, as a general rule, don't last in close proximity to professional heroes. Gorm shook his head and charged on.
"I don't know how good the bard is. If he used to be a thief, he should know how to handle a dagger or a short sword, and we'll have to find a way to get the mages fighting like a team, if they're to be any use. But they've got the foundations of heroics, something to build on. This could work."
They took a shortcut through a small park to stairs that led down another 3 tiers.
"And we've got a top-notch ranger. Well, at least she's been on big campaigns before. I know it's been a while, and I've heard about the bad spells, but let me tell you, Gleebeck, Katha used to be something."
"Tabron!"
"All the bards were singing about her back when I was on Midah's knee. There's greatness just beneath the surface. We just got to bring it out. Keep her head in the game and out of the bottle. I can make it work."
"Gnabzebin!"
"Well, of course I can always count on Eheen, or Geist, whatever he's calling himself. Might be a bit unstable now, but it sounds like he can still handle a sword."
They were almost to the Temple of Almatra. Gorm was nearly running.
"Take me, and that's 3 veterans. Then we've got 3 unknowns, the High Scribe and a Goblin Squire."
Gorm rushed through the temple gate.
"We won't be slaying any dragons any time soon. Ha! I doubt we could take on a young wyvern."
He bounded up the temple stairs.
"But for a fetch quest, we'll be fighting bandits and giant rats. Maybe a few orcs if things go badly. We can handle that."
Haraldin was waiting at the top of the steps.
"There you are," he said. "I was asked to—"
"We can do this,"
Gorm shouted, grabbing the bard by the arms and shaking vigorously.
"It's going to work."
"What's going to work?"
"This quest, this plan. We're going to make it, lad. We just need to work together. It's going to—"
The temple wall erupted, a wall of scarlet fire blasting from it like a sideways volcano, spouting over the edge of the stairs just a few feet from where Gorm stood. Marble pillars around the obliterated wall began to glow red with the heat. Ceremonial shrubs ignited. Gorm could feel his whiskers singeing. Haraldin shot him a knowing grin. "Good luck with that," he said. Gleebeck stared at the flames, his arms limp by his sides.
"Spug!"
A figure became visible within the torrent of fire, steadily skidding backwards as the force of the assault drove him toward the edge of the stairs. Jin's sorcerous shield winked out as the flames subsided. The cobbles on either side of him were charred and bubbling, but the wizard and the stones behind him were unharmed.
"Do you see?" Jin snarled at Gorm. He waved a hand at the smoldering hole in the temple. "Do you see what I have to deal with here? This is the kind of rank amateurism that marks an apprentice.
The Noctomancer barely had time to reweave his shielding spell before another blast of fire slammed into him. Gorm could hear Laruna shrieking something unintelligible over the roar of the fire.
"Oh, very mature," Jin hollered. He strode back into the smoldering temple as his shield blinked away again. "As if that's a rational argument."
Heraldin turned to Gorm.
"Well, it was a nice thought," he said, "but I still don't think our chances are good."
"I didn't say anything about chances," Gorm growled. "I said it's going to work. Come on."
Inside, the temple was chaos. Acolytes rushed around with buckets and urns of water, while several priestesses tried to spare some ancient scrolls and statues from the growing flames. The other heroes were rushing toward the fight as well. Gorm spotted Niln shouting and waving his arms at Jin. The wizard, however, was engaged in a shouting match with a pillar of fire that was rising from the floor, and at the center of the pillar was Laruna. Blazing energy spiraled around the Solomancer in a sorcerous cyclone. The young woman's face was a mask of rage, and something behind it burned with a fury bright enough to send a fiery orange glow streaming from her eyes and mouth.
"Blood and ashes. That's a lot of fire," said Gorm.
Heraldin nodded in agreement and subconsciously checked his eyebrows.
"Still, only one thing to be done for it," said Gorm.
He leaped over a fallen pew and started at a full sprint. Gorm had fought his fair share of wizards and mages in his day. They tended to turn villainous more than any other class of hero. When one made a habit of unraveling the fabric of the universe and twisting the strands back together to suit one's whims, things like guild rules and the law and basic decency seemed less and less immutable. And since there were so many magic-using foes out in the field, warrior heroes came in only two varieties, those who knew how to fight mages and extra crispy. Gorm ran around the sanctuary until he was directly behind Laruna, and then he switched suddenly to a full sprint directly toward her. The Solomancer was so engrossed in her conflict with Jin that she didn't even turn until Gorm was launching himself into the air. The pillar of fire around her dissipated as Gorm's shoulder slammed into her, sending her flying into the wall. She slid to the ground with a faint cry. Jin approached as Gorm was struggling to his feet.
"I must say, that was surprisingly effective," said the wizard.
"Aye, on account of the first principle of fighting wizards."
"What's that?"
Gorm dropped him with a hammer punch to the jaw.
"Surprise!" he said.
It took a bucket of water to rouse the mages. By the time they were standing, the other heroes had gathered around.
"Listen up," said Gorm. "I know better than to say there ain't going to be any more fights in the party. Nobody ever stopped inter-party violence just by asking. But I will say that if there are any more fights in the party, I'm gonna join 'em, and I'm gonna win. And whoever loses is going to very much regret it. Understood?"
He stared at each of them in turn. The mages nodded sullenly. Katha and Heraldin seemed more surprised. Niln looked decidedly suspicious.
"Why do you care all of a sudden?" the High Scribe asked.
"Because we're going into the field soon, and this kind of nonsense gets heroes killed every day. So tomorrow, first thing, we start training, and we're going to work together, like a bloody team of thrice-cursed professionals who know that our lives depend on each other. And then we're going to find those thrice-cursed marbles and finish this bloody quest, and we're going to do it fast, because this is going to work, burn it!"
Niln sat at his desk. A honeycomb of cubbies and drawers ran around the walls of his study, all crammed with scrolls and parchments. Pale moonlight shone through his solitary window. Candlelight illuminated the blank page in front of him. He held a quill at the ready, waiting. The scripture began. "And lo, the six were gathered by the High Scribe, and blessed by the king, as was foretold by the prophet Aseph." Niln's quill glided across the page quickly, effortlessly, and without thought.
holy text was left in its wake, and I saw two vines, one growing from the sea and one from the forest. A vision of two titanic vines, spread from the ocean to the green span, appeared behind the goddess's words. The vine from the sea grew up a great mountain and entwined the top and set out roots, and the vine from the forest grew up the same path and bloomed in death and smote the vine from the sea. And the sea vine burned, and the blossoms of the forest vine rose up, and the vine of the forest lived once more and entwined the mountain. The vision departed as suddenly as it had come. Niln dutifully finished transcribing it, though he had no idea what it meant. Incoherent rambling scriptures were a hallmark of the All-Mother. Indeed, those who believed Scribe Pathelin was the true High Scribe instead of Niln were quick to point out that most of Niln's writings made much more sense than any words of Almatra for more than 300 years. His predecessor's life work had been a treatise on the similarities of toenails to prawns. Scribe Pathelin's latest work was an inventory of all the items built into mouse nests within the temple, including personal names for all of the buttons. The Book of Niln, by contrast, was filled with relevant stories, verifiable history, and direct commandments. Naturally, the other Almatrans held it as suspect. And the wizard Jin did provoke the mage Laruna, who did throw a mighty spell at him, and he did return another spell, and so forth, and their battle did smite the temple mightily. Niln sighed. He had hoped that this particular incident wouldn't have made it into the scriptures, but he didn't have any say. The words of the holy texts burned across his mind, and his only recourse was to write them down. What the goddess willed, he wrote. So Gorm, son of Inger, son of Hruxo, did smite both of yon mages, and tell them to shape up, for he held a great fire in his heart for the quest. Gorm's newfound enthusiasm was an interesting development. Sometime between the king's ceremony and arriving at the temple, the dwarf had transformed into a veritable zealot. He had ordered training gear, scheduled a time for practice in the morning, and delivered a rousing speech, all before dinner. Niln couldn't see any reason why Gorm would become so passionate so quickly. Still, Niln had little choice but to accept the dwarf's sudden support, whatever the cause. The All-Mother knew he needed it. That night, Heraldin Strummans, the bard, went to the room of Caitha of House Tyriath, for he held a great fire in his pants, and he did profess his desire for her. Niln shook his head and sat back to listen. A yelp of pain rang out from across the temple. Niln resumed writing. But Yon Elf made it clear that she was not interested, and in so doing they awoke Gorm, son of Inger. Bootsteps echoed in a distant staircase, loud and fast. And Gorm did correct Heraldin Strummans and tell him to behave professionally. Gruff shouting echoed in the staircase, with much emphasis. Niln winced at a low thud and a cry of agony. And this was a distraction to the High Scribe Niln, but his work was not yet completed, for his fate was to assemble the foretold heroes and to lead them to their destiny, as was foretold in the first book of Niln. The conflict was a distraction, Niln thought, as the goddess's words faded from his inner sight. But he was undeterred. The scriptures made it clear that he was the seventh hero. Although... Niln set the quill down. A thought tugged at the back of his mind, a seed of hesitation that had plagued him since the verses of prophecy first bloomed in his mind. The verses he wrote never directly named him as the seventh hero, or even one of the heroes. He would assemble them, and lead them, and quest with them, and guide them, but he was never said to be one of them. Still, what else could the scriptures mean? He was called by name to lead the heroes of destiny. He was chosen to assemble the six. He was explicitly told by the goddess that his works would save the world. Niln shook off the lingering doubts and left his study. There was much to be done before bed. Most pressingly, the bard would likely need a healing potion. Gorm ascended the tower steps, carrying a hunk of bread and several slabs of cheese from the larder. Gleebec followed him, laboring under a load of loaves, cheeses, fruits, and pastries.
"I admire a good appetite, lad," Gorm told the goblin, "but I think you may be overdoing your breakfast."
"Thugrong!"
"You keep eating like you'll never see food again.
Oh.
It didn't occur to Gorm until it was too late that up until recently every meal that Gleebec had eaten had likely been served with a side order of uncertainty. Aside from heroes, starvation was the greatest threat wild goblins faced. They could hear the voices of the other heroes on the terrace as they neared the top of the stairs. Gorm slowed when he realized that he was the subject of discussion.
"He's out of his right mind," Jin was saying. "He seemed like the normal sort at first, but yesterday he came in practically frothing at the mouth to tell us to get ready for this quest."
"That was after he assaulted us," Laruna added.
"Absolutely bonkers," Haraldin said.
"I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt," said Caitha. "I was excited about the job at first, too."
"You were inebriated to the point of oblivion," said Jin.
"Exactly. He was probably drunk last night. It seems more likely than him suddenly going insane."
"It makes sense that he would join the Almatran's madness," Haraldin said. "He's a berserker, you know."
"Aren't those the dwarves who get so angry they go crazy in battle?" asked Laruna.
"Berserkers are members of the Brotherhood of Flame, the most elite of the dwarven fighters," said Jin, "the highest honored among their armies."
"And?" prompted Haraldin.
"And yes, they get very angry and go absolutely crazy in battle," Jin said.
"It ain't anger," said Gorm, stepping out from the stairway.
The other heroes had been breakfasting around an old oak table, and upon Gorm's appearance, they attempted to arrange themselves around it to effect maximum nonchalance.
"Oh, good morning, Gorm," Haraldin attempted.
"I mean, of course there's some anger. You're fighting, after all. But anger ain't what makes you berserk."
Gorm stood next to the table and looked out across the terrace to the city.
"It's purpose. You find something in the battle to fight for, something you die for. Your brothers back in the clan home, the honor of your da's name, the lives of innocents. A reason to fight, if nothing else, like a tiny fire, and you reach out and grab it. And you hold it no matter how it burns. And soon, you can't separate yourself from your purpose any more than you could take the light from a candle flame. You live to win. You can't lose. You can only die."
"Whoa," said Laruna.
"And later they'll say you looked crazed, or you howled like a beast, or you seemed possessed, but their words are nothing but a vapor and a breeze. 'Cause you can still feel a flicker of the fire you held inside, and you know now what you knew then, and you'll never be the same. That's what it is to be a berserker, and I'd never trade it for anything. Or I wouldn't have, until I ran. A berserker doesn't run."
He caught Geist's eyes and saw his own painful memories reflected in them. Memories of death, and fear, and flight. Gorm sighed.
"I lost me flame at the dungeon of Azanon. Call me what you will, and say I'm crazy if you like, but don't call me a berserker. I ain't one anymore."
"So this is just your normal run-of-the-mill insanity," said Haraldin. Gorm shot him a sidelong glance.
"I don't believe this campaign will be as bad as you think. This quest ain't half the danger we thought it'd be, and who knows, maybe they'll be done after that."
"Or maybe they'll send us after the Dragon of Windspar. Or troll hunting," Haraldin said. "The Almatrans are half as mad as their goddess."
"The Tandosians ain't, and they're behind this quest."
"You're a bigger fool than I thought, if you trust the Tandosians," said Jin.
"Ain't got much of a choice, do we?" said Gorm. "We're on the quest either way. As far as I can see, we can either do what we can to make the job better, or we can sit back and make snarky comments."
"I'm happy to say that Mr. Ingerson has the right of it," Mr. Flynn materialized from the shadows behind them.
"Don't do me any favors, mercenary," said Gorm. "What are you here for?"
"Why, only to deliver a couple of messages."
"So deliver them."
"Naturally. The first is that you are to meet the esteemed ambassador from House Tyriath for lunch tomorrow. You will join her ladyship at the Elven Embassy at noon. And as for the second, it almost seems unnecessary, but I do want to make sure you realize that Master Niln's safety on this adventure is paramount."
"It'll be fine. We're getting up and training today," said Gorm.
"Ah, yes. But I'm sure you're aware that some of the greatest threats to professional heroes come from within the party, do they not?" said Mr. Flynn. And, given your reluctance, I'm guessing at least one of you wouldn't be above slipping a dagger between a scribe's ribs to be free of this quest. Hold on. Are you suggesting we'd kill Niln and make a break for it? Said Laruna. Not all of you, certainly. Maybe not even most of you. But there might be one or two among you who have thought that the open road would provide an opportunity for freedom. Most likely the bard, he added, pointing. Fair enough, said Heraldin.
Sounds more like something ye'd do, Flynn, said Gorm. I know your type. You'd kill your own mother for tuppence.
Ah, you see, that's where you're wrong, said Flynn. I know the value of a life, usually within a few cents. When I killed my mother, it was for well over 5,000 gilden. That's disgusting, said Caitha. That's economics. Everyone is worth something, and some people are worth a lot more posthumously, which is rather the point, you see. Think what you will of him, but Master Niln's identity as the seventh hero means that he is worth more than any of you. And what's more, essentially all of your worth comes from the fact that you're on Master Niln's quest. If he were to meet an untimely end, there'd be no quest for you to be on, and subsequently no value in you being alive. The price on your heads, on the other hand, would be more than enough to compensate for the trouble of finding and collecting them.
"You through?" said Gorm.
"Merely a friendly warning."
"You make a lot of friendly warnings," said Gorm. "They're all starting to run together, sounding like a bunch of noise."
"I assure you that I'm more than capable of backing up my good word, Mr. Ingerson."
"Perhaps, but then who'd be on the wrong side of the law? We're heroes on a job now," said Gorm. "I have enough of your crowing. Be off!"
Mr. Flynn's smile was like an autumn frost. "It seems you won't be so easily manipulated."
"Seems as much," Gorm grinned back at him.
The standoff was interrupted by a distant rumbling.
"Coo! Coo!"
"Yes, thank you, Mr. Brunt," shouted Mr. Flynn. "We must work on those bird calls." He turned back to his heroes. "That signal means Master Niln is on his way. I must bid you good day. I must also insist that this conversation never happened."
"It seems more like it never ends," said Jin.
"You stand corrected, sir," said Mr. Flynn, and took his leave.
"What a little goblin snot," said Laruna, watching the gnome walk away. "No offense."
"Nab Hopsit!"
Gorm spotted Niln walking across the terrace and carrying a small bowl of oats and a cup of tea for breakfast. "I think there's something wrong with that ogre," said the High Scribe. "Well, regardless, I believe you said we were to start training this morning, Mr. Ingerson?" Gorm grinned. They started with assessments.
"We'll run several drills to assess where you are in your fighting skills and where you need work," Gorm explained. "When we're done, we'll see where we need work, and the top performers will train those who lag behind."
They ran sprints and did an obstacle course. They shot targets and sparred with a training golem. They held a mixed skirmish fought with wooden swords. By mid-morning, Gorm had a good idea of where they were.
"We're dead," Gorm said.
"It's not all bad," said Caitha.
"He needed a healing potion after fighting a training golem. A bloody training golem," Gorm said.
"Well, it is a sorceress automaton built for combat."
"It has pillows for arms! I can't see how he even got nicked fighting one, let alone needed a potion."
Gorm rummaged through the medicinal rucksack.
"How many did he drink, anyway? I thought we had more elixir."
"So Niln needs work," said Caitha. "Look on the bright side. The wizard was better than expected."
"Well, set the bar low enough," grumbled Gorm.
"And the bard can fight better than you thought," Caitha said.
"He's got no sense of the battlefield. Too used to questing solo. Doesn't look past his own nose in a fight."
"Well, we're here to work on that," said the elf.
"Aye, I suppose we are."
He set Caitha up, training both Niln and Glebak, starting with stave drills.
"We'll try to move you up to daggers this afternoon," Gorm told them, "assuming you've made enough progress."
"I must confess I'm a little surprised that you've put me with the goblin," said Niln.
"Don't worry," said Gorm. "You'll catch up."
"Lobdod!"
Glebak brandished his staff.
For Haraldin's training, Gorm had a couple of attendants bring in an hourglass and a small wooden box. It contained a fine board inset with a grid of mahogany and pine spaces and two sets of ornately carved ivory and ebony pieces. "I'm to play a board game?" Haraldin said incredulously.
"You're good with a blade," said Gorm. "Good enough that a day's drills ain't going to do much for you, at least. But you lack strategy, a plan, a mind for staying ahead of your foe."
He set the final piece, an ebony king, on the board with a faint click.
"Thrones teaches all that."
"So we're just going to play thrones all day?"
"Not me," said Gorm. He nodded to Geist.
"What? The mute?" demanded the bard. "Why not pit me against one of the topiary shrubs? I've seen them move more today."
Geist regarded them with the cold, tenuous sincerity of thin ice.
"Make a move."
"He didn't even participate in the drills. For all we know, I should be training him."
"Make a move."
"We'll start by teaching him to speak. Just make a move."
Haraldin sighed, advanced an ivory bannerman, and flipped the hourglass.
"There," said Gorm. "Now, I can't speak for this Geist fellow, but Eheen the Red never lost a game of thrones in all the years I knew him. Never turned down a challenge, and never failed to win. But hey, maybe he's changed."
He nodded to the sand pouring through the hourglass.
"Maybe he doesn't mind losing by forfeit."
Geist stared out over the horizon.
"Losing to a bard?"
The weapons master didn't so much as flinch. The sand had almost totally drained from the top of the hourglass.
"All right, well, I'm surprised," said Gorm. "Seems he's willing to let his throne's record go without a fight. Never thought it'd be broken by a common bard working for the Almatrans."
"This is starting to get insulting," said Haraldin. "Anyways, his time is up."
Geist moved like a silk in the wind, gliding up to the table and advancing an ebony bannerman in one swift motion. He quickly flipped the hourglass, seated himself across the table from Haraldin, and resumed staring silently into the air.
"Oho! That's your move," said Haraldin. "Nobody moves the outer bannerman to start. I thought you were supposed to be good at this."
He advanced a paladin.
Gorm smiled.
"Enjoy your education," he said.
He hadn't made it halfway across the terrace when he heard the bard shouting, "How have you won already? I didn't even get to make 5 turns. I demand a rematch."
That left the mages. Gorm took them down to the back courtyard of the temple. It was a good-sized expanse of grass and stone pressed against the ridge of Mount Windspar, with few features but a couple of stone benches and an old plum tree. The fact that the courtyard was so big and contained so little was exactly why Gorm had chosen it as the site for Jin to train Laruna. Both mages erupted into immediate protests upon hearing Gorm's plan.
"I'm not going to work with that pompous orc-sired fool."
"I can't work with someone so absolutely ignorant. What could I learn from him? What could she learn at all?"
Their arguments washed over Gorm like waves over a stone. When it became clear that their dislike of each other wasn't going to sway the dwarf, the mages moved their arguments to a unified front.
"I can't even touch solomancy, let alone teach it," said Jin.
"There's a reason there are 2 orders, said Laruna. "Mages can only see one side of magic."
"All the mages worth mentioning, anyway," said Jin. "The point is, I really don't think I can teach her."
"I mean, I don't like the guy, but he's not a filthy omnimancer. He's not going to have any idea about solomancy."
"Well, I have some ideas of the theory."
"The theory seems like that's what she needs," said Gorm. "She's got plenty of power, no technique."
Laruna shot Jin a venomous glare.
"I don't need technique," she growled. "Look, it's simple. I'm going to be a pyromancer. I burn things. I throw fire at them, or set them alight, or make them explode. This is not complicated."
"Except in that last fight, you didn't fare so well. You couldn't burn the Noctomancer or stop me from taking you down. All you managed to do was cause a lot of damage to the temple, and maybe cost the Almatrans their property insurance."
"Well,
They ain't happy about that, by the way. Point is, this magic business seems to be a little more complicated than you think."
"Thank you," said Jin. "That's what I've been saying all along. She may have some raw talent, but it's simply unacceptable that she should advance beyond an apprenticeship while using such crude weaves.
And your weaves are much better, prompted Gorm.
Oh, there's no comparison, said Jin. I'm the youngest wizard in 3 centuries to teach classes at the academy. Archmages have personally attended to see my weaves. I'm one of the most highly regarded spellcasters in the Freedlands. Some say I'll make Archmage by 35.
Good. Training Laruna here won't be a problem, then. I'll expect an update on her progress this afternoon. Don't start any fires, or else.
Gorm turned and walked away without giving the mages a chance to respond.
Oh, there's no comparison, he heard Laruna mimic. One of the most highly regarded spellcasters in the Freedlands.
Shut up, said Jin.
That's excellent advice, said Laruna. If only we had thought of it before talking the dwarf's ear off about what a great teacher you are.
Let's just get started, sighed the wizard.
They spent the day in drills and games, sparring and spellcasting. Gorm wandered between each of the 3 stations, offering encouragement and barking orders in turn. A long-forgotten thrill was creeping back into him, notes of excitement that rang in his voice and hummed in his bones. The open road was before him, with mysterious lands and unknown foes and treasures waiting to be discovered. Of course, he had spent the last 20 years with the open road before him, and certainly there were plenty of unknown foes along his way. But now he had a task, a reason to roam, rewards to be reaped. Not all who wander are lost. Some are on quests. Gleebeck made it through his stave drills with ease and started the basics of dagger work. He insisted on using the knife Gorm had given him, taken from the threatening salve addict. In the same amount of time, Niln had gotten to the point where he was able to make it through a staff routine without injuring himself.
"We'll call it progress," said Gorm.
After losing 42 straight games without ever mounting an offense, Haraldin managed to last for more than 20 turns and threaten Geist's throne in their final match of the day.
"I prefer to quit while I'm ahead," Haraldin explained.
"You have a funny definition of ahead," said Gorm.
"I prefer to define words in ways that suit me," said Haraldin.
The mages accomplished little, if anything. When Gorm arrived looking for a report, they spoke over each other as they attempted to shift blame. Soon they were yelling, and then they were screaming at each other. And then there likely would have been another magical battle had Gorm not intervened.
"At least they didn't burn anything down," Niln remarked.
"We'll call it progress," sighed Gorm.
"See how much better that is," said Haraldin. Caitha retired to her rooms after the so-called feast. Tonight's dinner had been a cruel mockery of the elaborate celebrations that had preceded her old quests. Before she'd headed out to take on the ratmen of Warpspire Peak, they'd served half a barn's worth of livestock to hungry crowds of nobles. That was back when being the Jade Wind was something to be proud of, when she was somebody. Now even the Almatrans couldn't hide their contempt or amusement at her plight. And why should they? She was training a new blood and a goblin. It seemed like such a waste for a heroine of her caliber. Then again, she wasn't what she used to be, or so she was told. The whole situation set her on edge. She liked Gorm, and could respect his newfound energy, but his enthusiasm was misplaced. They were on a quest with the Almatrans. And even if they survived, their hero careers were over. Her hands were shaking. She needed something to relax her, just for a little, just this once. Then she'd be fine, and she could move on to the next quest. She arrived at the foot of her bed before she knew where she was going, her hands already slipping past a false bottom in her rucksack to find a few glass vials. She pulled out a small vial filled with warmly incandescent liquid. Caitha had long forgotten her first healing potion. Somewhere, on some adventure, she'd doubtlessly found herself wounded and bleeding with more foes to fight. A bottle of elixir could mean the difference between life and death. Once she began spending too much time in the taverns, however, she started taking elixir less cautiously. She'd drink healing potions after any wound, not just the life-threatening ones. She'd keep them on her belt loop so she could grab them faster when in a fight.
She found herself running headlong into danger, not caring if she was wounded. No, even hoping that she would be, so she could drink the sweet fluid and feel the sweet fire run through her veins. Somewhere along the line, she'd started taking it when she wasn't on a job, sometime back, when she was just starting to mess up on jobs and lose clients. She knew that taking elixir was risky. Everyone had seen the addicts wandering around, hacking at themselves and begging for healing potions. Katha wasn't that bad, she told herself, as she sat down next to her bed. She laid a few small rags around her and then drew her long hunting knife. She just needed it once more, one more time, to take the edge away. And then she'd stop. She had to stop. A tear trickled down her cheek. Of course, every time had been the last time. Just like some small part of her knew, the next time would be. Katha started near her wrist and cut down the front of her forearm almost to her elbow. She sat back and grimaced, feeling a familiar thrill as she watched her life pour down her arm. She wondered if she'd bother to stop at this time. People would say it was a waste, a horrible shame that one so great should wind up like that. But they said it now, and if she died, she wouldn't have to hear it anymore, or know it anymore. Katha threw her head back and drank the elixir, tasting its fire and copper flavor, feeling it burn sweetly down her throat. She rested against her bed as the gash in her arm closed itself. Warmth spread from her wrist through the rest of her body as the magic began to replenish the blood she had lost. Her eyes glazed over. It was the warmth that she craved. It enveloped her. A rapturous glow took her in its arms and loved her unconditionally. It drained away all of the memories, the fear, the shame. Everything painful floated away on velvet wings, and in the warmth, Katha could finally be herself, whoever that was.